Hi, this is Jerry from SharePoint. This episode has been recorded remotely due to the COVID-19 restrictions and therefore may contain some technical glitches. We hope you'll bear with us until it's safe to return to our regular format of recording in the breweries. Until then, thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to SharePoint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host.
Today I'm talking with Jake Berg from DC Beer. Thanks for being on the show, Jake.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
For people in our audience who are unfamiliar, talk a little bit about how the site got started and then share with us all the various resources available on dcbeer.com.
Certainly. The site started in 2009, I believe, started by a home brewer and his friend. So we're going to shout out to Mike Dolan and to Andrew Nations. Mike is still in the area and is still homebrewing, checks in from time to time. Andrew Nations is now co-owner and co-founder of Great Raft Brewing. He and his wife, who is another co-owner and co-founder of Great Raft Brewing in Shreveport, Louisiana, they moved from Northern Virginia back down there. Wow. In their stead, they've left Bill DeBon in charge. You may know him on the internets as Bill DeBeer, and I am now editing and writing for the site, which is dcbeer.com. We've got interviews with various brewery and beer happenings in the area, news articles, a directory of all of the breweries, beer stores, bottle shops, homebrew shops of note throughout the greater metro area. So that includes Northern Virginia, DC itself, and of course, several counties in Maryland. I think most folks go to the site because when we're not in a pandemic, we have a pretty nifty calendar that shows people all of the various brewery events. Now people should go to the site because we have a sort of a placeholder post where you can order either for pickup at a brewery or for delivery, beer from any number of local area breweries, all of whom are suffering with sales down and on-premise taproom sales way, way down and could use your money. You're probably at home. Buy their beer, please.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've had a few guests from down the DC area. We've had Denison's on a couple of times. We met with Ben Hunter early, and then we swung back through, and in May and June, we kind of went back and revisited past guests to say, how are you guys adapting to COVID? How can we help you? You know, how can we get the word out? And so we had Ben on again. And then we had Simon and Brian from Red Beer on. So we've tried to get down to DC. We need to get down there a little bit more. A lot of great breweries to hit, but you guys clearly, when you look at the website, and like you said, there's a lot of content there, and then even the social media that you're very active with, you guys are clearly very passionate about DC beer. So tell me some of the different things that you guys do to kind of really help promote DC breweries.
Sure. I do want to emphasize that this is an all-volunteer effort on our part. That is, no one is getting paid to own, run, operate or write for dcbeer.com with a handful of scant few exceptions when we're able to fall into some money. We are always looking for new writers, new partners, and such. We'd like to think we have a pretty robust social media presence. We are at DC Beer across all major platforms, which I would say Twitter. Mike Stein and I are sort of like the one half each of Twitter. I do a little bit on Facebook. Brandy Nicole Holder does a little bit on Facebook, and she's responsible for most of our Instagram engagement. Richard Fowell from Junto Media, I guess now Voxtopia Media, is the publisher. I'm the editor of the site, and generally, the writers and I, we sit down, we brainstorm, we come up with things to write about, we sign it out. We've got fancy Trello software to sort of track things through. Breweries opening, notable new beer releases, how breweries, how bottle shops, how really anybody is coping with all of this that is going on, meaning a pandemic and increased awareness of racism and how to combat it. These are all things that we're, as a site, trying to write about, trying to deal with. in general, I would say the Twitter feed is a bit snarkier than Facebook and Instagram. Instagram really is for cool pictures of beer and sort of reposting what breweries are up to. Twitter, and I say this because I run half the Twitter feed, or I run one Twitter feed half the time, that to me is where the magic happens. There's a lot of interaction with both breweries and beer fans in the area there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I say. You guys' social engagement is pretty solid there on Twitter. You guys also have the DC Beer Show. So tell our audience a little bit about what to expect from that and then how frequently they should keep an eye out for that.
DC Beer Show is currently on hiatus. Okay. We're doing a bit of retooling. In general, look for episodes about once a week, every Wednesday or so. We were real good with it up until the pandemic hit, and we were able to ride it out through April or so. And since then, we've dropped it off. All of us have day jobs and sort of making the pivot to doing those jobs online or in person in a more protective way. So as we do not get sick, knock on wood. That's sort of taken priority. We are looking to bring the show back. And so I would say look for that soon. But past episodes are certainly available both on dcbeer.com, via iTunes, via the podcast app of your choice. In general, we try to bring brewers, brewer representatives, owners on, and we just chat about whatever it is.
Sounds a little bit like what Big Jim Bachman over here at the Maryland Brewers Association try to do with his Fermented Fridays, try to have somebody on and just, you know, let them talk about new beers and whatever's going on and just kind of let people know. So that's good. That's good that that stuff's out there. And I think it's important that you pointed out that there's a lot of people involved in your site and everybody's doing it because they love craft beer and not because they're getting paid.
Right.
Yeah. I was, when we talked to Chad and Matt not long ago up at breweries in PA, that was one of the things they mentioned, is they're trying to be pretty comprehensive for the Pennsylvania beer site. And you know, they do a really, really good job. But they're just like, hey, don't get the impression that we're making money off of this, that we have more. When we do these giveaways, it's because people have donated money or breweries have given us things to help give away. They said, we're not making money on this site. We're doing it for the love of the beer.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, if I'm correct, in addition, you guys, you know, on top of the resources you've talked about, you also work with businesses on events and promotions?
Yes, we are a part of DC Beer Week, and so we help out with the marketing and the PR aspect of those things. We'll certainly help out local breweries. We are available. I guess it is unfortunate now that there is not as much to market and promote, given that most folks are staying home or if they're dining out, it's being done much more infrequently than it was, say, in February.
Well, that's what I was curious about. Without that, you know, there's a number of opportunities. I'm sure those are some financial resources to kind of help you guys. So with a lot of that cut down and everybody doing it on their own, how are you guys able to keep, DC Beer afloat?
We've got a pretty good deal in terms of who's hosting the site and the finances behind that. I will say, I mean, the pandemic has certainly affected us. You may have noticed a lull and a drop-off in the number of posts. You certainly see it in our Barron events calendar. We've got a few scant things listed, and those are either an online beer ordering and pickup from, say, Port City, a virtual drag show happy hour with Red Bear, but something that would be a big to-do beer release is now just more of a, hey, it's Friday, you should buy this beer on Beer Me and come through and pick it up or we'll deliver it. And no doubt, and Richard has watched as well, the site traffic has dropped because of all of this. I don't want to be to claim any amount of victimhood here. I would love it if traffic were up, but this is not a real problem compared to everything that is going on outside of the dcbeer.com website and the DC Beer community.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, you've got a loyal enough following that they understand. And when you get anything that's any type of news, you know, people jump on it. There's been a lot of discuss about the other half brewery coming down and, you know, getting in the area. And so it's not something that's really new. I've been following you guys for a while and, you know, you've talked about that and they've been planning that, but now that it sounds like it's really going to happen and they're advertising for jobs and things like that, the social media site for you guys blowing up with people wanting to talk about that like it's brand new.
Yeah. Yesterday was a very, very busy day over on the DC Beer Twitter feed. I know this because I was running the Twitter feed from a beach chair looking out at the Atlantic Ocean. There are certainly worse places to be, sit there and talk about beer with friends and strangers alike while you're looking at dolphins and seagulls and kids playing in the sand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we recently spoke with Marcus Baskerville at Weather Souls about the Black is Beautiful initiative. Talk a little bit about the DC breweries that are supporting this cause down there.
Sure. I guess I would start by mentioning, since we've discussed Other Half, that Other Half had this initiative All Together, or Ale Together, as it were. And we saw a few DC area breweries jump on that. The big ones mentioning, I believe it was Astrolab, Silver Branch, Streetcar 82. I know I'm going to leave a couple out, and so forgive me for that. But we saw some participation in that, perhaps because of everything that has happened since. All Together happened before George Floyd and before mass protests against police brutality and systemic racism and such, and also because the DC area is diverse. The Black is Beautiful participation locally seems much, much greater than the All Together one. To me, it's a very good thing. There are breweries who are still in the process of developing their recipes. Like Port City is going to have one coming out. Rocket Frog out of Sterling now has a date on theirs. It's going to be August 28th in cans. They're going to partner with a bunch of Black-owned businesses. That's a very good thing. But as of right now, there's a whole host of breweries that you could buy Black is Beautiful from. And they've put different spins on it. Blue Jacket's got this 10% Imperial Stout. You know, Three Stars has one that was brewed with Poncillo sugar, maybe. Okay. I am butchering whatever it is this is. I do like to cook, but this one is unknown to me. There's a brewery who's doing Black is Beautiful, but as a Black IPA.
I think that Black IPA, that was Saints Row. I think that was the spin that they put on that.
Excellent. And so I think people are having some fun with it, which is good, because at the same time all this is happening, it's 90 degrees outside. Pretty much every day in July was 90, and that may not be the best environment to drink a 10% Imperial Stout in. Overall, a whole bunch of breweries have been participating in that, and it's been very much excellent to see.
Yeah, I think that the diehard stout people will argue that you drink stouts all year round, but I'm with you. It's got to be a little colder for me, or at least go inside and crank up the air conditioning, you know. But
I mean, I'll drink a Guinness all year round, but a 10% stout, maybe if I'm in front of the air conditioning for a whole bunch of time.
With a good hearty meal, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, along the same lines as Black is Beautiful, Hellbender Brewing Company worked with Tim Bryson on the Amplify Black Voices. You guys wrote about that, and that's recently been something that's been out. So tell our audience about that cause and then how it directly ties into and benefits the DC community.
Sure. So Tim Bryson is a PhD or MD candidate at the University of Maryland. And he linked up with the folks over at Hellbender, who actually have another interesting beer that serves and highlights underrepresented communities coming online August 14th. They're going to release Code Talker Pale Ale. One of their brewers is Navajo. The grandfather was a Navajo Code Talker, and this beer is brewed in his honor, which is pretty, pretty cool. They're going to put it in cans for the first time. It'll probably pop up in crowlers and such at the brewery first. But anyway, back to Tim Bryson et al. They linked up and they decided to make not a Black is Beautiful stout, but a hoppy pale ale called Amplify Black Voices. They had Tim Bryson over at the brewery to work on the recipe development, to help out with the brewing. And 100% of the proceeds are going to go to the Capital Partners for Education, which is a DC-based mentoring program.
Great.
So again, like with Altogether, with Black is Beautiful, with Amplify Black Voices, you can buy beer, drink it, it's delicious, and know that you're supporting both local businesses and local communities. And so for me, this is a very, very good thing to see beer being used to bring communities together, to use an influx of cash into these communities as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, the craft beer community is pretty unique in how much they really get behind the cause and they do something like this. I mean, when we talked with Marcus at Weather Souls, that was one of the things he discussed. He said, he goes, what other industry? He's like, industry. He said, do you have over 1,000 members that were participating for the Black is Beautiful? He's like, this is businesses, 1,000+ businesses all uniting behind one cause. He said, that's what makes part of the craft beer community awesome.
Yeah. And it's businesses that are hurting because of an economic downturn right now as well.
Absolutely. And still looking to give and help out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we saw this a little bit yesterday. One of our good Twitter friends and users, shout out to Barden DC, sort of chimed in with, well, is other half going to be a good partner, a good fit for the area? Other half just donated $30,000 to Michael Jackson Foundation, helped put together by Brooklyn Brewery's Garrett Oliver. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of company that I want coming to DC. To me, that speaks volumes. That's very, very good. I think a lot of us are looking forward to other participating in the DC beer community in that way, just like they have in New York.
Well, like you said, it's good to know that you're going to get a good neighbor. It's not just another business coming in. So that's going to be exciting to watch. Well, remind people again where they can find you guys online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
So we are at DC Beer across all three of those places, dcbeer.com. Check us out.
Sounds good. Well, we'll have that available in our show notes and on our website at sharepintpodcast.com. Jake, let's get to know you a little bit better. Talk a little bit about your background and how you got into craft beer.
Sure. Born in D.C., raised in New York City, came back here for grad school. But my dad brought home Pete's Wicked Ale and Brooklyn Lager. So I may be dating myself a little bit here. I am now by far like the oldest craft beer person on the site in terms of like when I came into craft beer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my impression of beer was Bud, maybe occasionally like Beck's or St. Pauli Girl if you were feeling fancy. And then all of a sudden there was Pete's Wicked and there was Brooklyn Lager, so like an overhopped Vienna Lager. These things were pretty, pretty cool. I actually liked the way that they tasted. That's not a knock on Coors Light, Miller High Life. I play softball. I eat crabs. I drink those kinds of beers when I think it's appropriate for me to drink them. And you all should, of course, drink whatever it is you want, even if it's something I'd never touch, like a lactose bomb of, you know, boysenberry, something that's vaguely Gosa Berliner Weiss, but would make a German recoil in horror. Yeah, I feel you. Went to school in Maine. Maine's got, I think, a pretty weird and unique brewing tradition. Mm-hmm. Peter Austin and Alan Ridgway really set up shop there. These are two brewers, brewery operators of some note. It's a very English tradition. They pitch a lot of ringwood yeast, which you don't see a lot of around anymore. Ringwood can kick off a lot of diacetyl. And so there are beers that have a little bit of a buttery butter popcorn note to them. Shipyard had an IPA when I was coming of age. It was entirely hopped with Fuggles. Everybody knows, you know, Citra and Mosaic and Galaxy. you know, this was a very strange beer. You know, so like 6% open fermented with this buttery yeast, and then just hit with all of the Fuggles. And so it was floral, it was herbal, it had a little bit of butter popcorn to it. And so Shipyard used that yeast strain, Geary's used that yeast strain, Smutty Nose used it as well. And then while I was in Maine, all of a sudden this beer called Allagash White popped up. I was like, huh, what's that? And so that was something new and different. Moved back down here, and lo and behold, there's the Brickskeller with nominally a couple thousand kinds of beers, but on any given night, maybe it was more like 700 or so. And so like you could pick a country and you could say, well, you know, tonight I'm only going to drink beer from the Baltics. Wow. And, you know, you'd knock through those.
That's pretty awesome. Now, you opened the door with talking about countries. My understanding is you've done a little bit of traveling overseas yourself, and you've been to a few different continents to enjoy their beer scene. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've seen in various parts of the world.
Sure. I used to live in Japan. And so my time in Japan unfortunately predates whatever happened in Japanese craft beer. What I saw in Japan was that you could go to a vending machine and you could buy a 3-liter oil can of Asahi.
Wow.
And there's nothing wrong with a 3-liter oil can of Asahi.
Not at all.
Yeah, but my understanding is that Japan is now very, very different. But I've been to breweries in the UK, in Italy, in Iceland. Most recently, I was in China in the summer of 2017. Mm-hmm. And I drank an awful lot of room temperature adjunct light lager, mm-hmm. until all of a sudden I found myself in this town, really a city because it's bigger than DC, but like so many places in China, we've never heard of it, even though there are 800,000 people there, called Zunyi. Uh-huh. And we post up, some friends and I, at this outdoor bar, and we're served in this giant tower 3 liters of locally made Hefeweizen that's served at about 45 degrees. And after drinking a lot of, 75 degrees snow, that was excellent.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. It's been pretty cool seeing a bunch of breweries pop up. I do want to keep in mind that like, I really like the local traditions. And so, like, say, like, Porterhouse Brewing out of Ireland, known for an oyster stout, wants to make a hazy IPA. I think that's great, and they should do it. I don't want to drink a Porterhouse hazy IPA here in D.C.
Right. Yeah.
I want what I want.
Well, that's interesting to hear the one from China being a Hefeweizen. We just finished talking with Zach Rissmiller from 1623, and you know, Zach's been brewing in Colorado for 10 years, but 1623 is here in Maryland, and he's run it with his cousin, and so the whole 1,623 miles of separation between those two, but he's a big Hefeweizen guy. He's a classic styles guy, but he's a number of awards from GAB Fest and others from Hefeweizens and Pilsners and his classic styles, and I don't know that I would have expected, them brewing Hefeweizens in China, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, hats off. I mean, when you think of beer in Asia, you tend to think of adjunct lager with rice in it.
Yeah.
and, perhaps they're slightly closer to the source of some Southern Hemisphere hops. And so maybe a couple newfangled IPAs. But walking through China, I saw a fair amount of Ballast Point Sculpin. I saw a fair amount of Brewdog. I thought, hey, that's pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, when we talk with Mark Osborne in Adroit Theory, they ship a lot of beer over to that part of the world. And that's the thing. He's like, boom, big drop shipments. And, Japan's drinking something that they just canned 7 days ago. And people in the area aren't even drinking something that fresh. And I was like, okay.
Mark and I have joked about this before, because sometimes he'll go to the Asian grocery store and he's buying them out of like their entire rambutan, this kind of weird spiky fruit you got to peel. And he's brewing with that. And then to see that beer being shipped back to Asia, where the rambutan came from, is, I think, kind of amusing.
Yeah, that's funny. It's almost like he's stealing it. I'm going to take this, I'm going to go brew it, and then I'm going to send it back, and you're going to buy it because you should have been brewing with it all along.
thank you for the raw material. Here's the finished product.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that's interesting. I'll have to check that one out. I had some Calamansi was probably the first time I had Calamansi was in, you know, some of his Illusion of Safeties ones that they did with their variants. And wow, was that a really great fruit. And he's just, he loves that fruit. And so he does seem to find some unique things and then really find good ways to incorporate them into their beer.
Yeah, I think like in terms of those ghosts, like he's got this arsenal of fruit and adjuncts all figured out in terms of what to deploy. Calamansi is a really good one. So it's got that sharp bitterness to it. It plays well off of a sour beer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And anybody that spends the amount of time that he does being the foodie that he is and pairing the food and cigars on a lot of those beers, and people are just like, what? And when we talk with him, he's like, no, these are all legit pairings. He's like, I spend a lot of time and, you know, so yeah, he's a bit of a connoisseur in a few different areas. Well, tell us how DC has varied from breweries in surrounding states with regards to what they've been able to do during COVID.
DC, I think, is somewhat fortunate in terms of lax alcohol legislation. And so if you look at, say, Maryland, Virginia, then further afield, Delaware and Pennsylvania, DC was able to get into selling and delivering online sales and then this off-premise takeout and pickup model quicker than the other states. And so this certainly has some advantages to it. DC bars and restaurants are able to make cocktails and then sell them to go so long as they're sealed. Podcast people can't see me do this. I just put the word sealed in air quotes. There's a bar in DC that was selling shots. They put the shots in takeout containers with a clear lid. They put electrical tape over it, and boom, now it's a sealed container. And so it's the takeout game, the delivery game has certainly helped DC breweries, bars, and restaurants. A lot of them were sort of first to that. I know this is supposed to be a beer podcast, but we've seen DC restaurants are selling off a bunch of their liquor. Mm-hmm. Cinder in Petworth is doing this. Jack Rose in Adams Morgan is doing this. And if you want yourself like a rare bottle of whiskey, you could do worse than going to those two places and paying the secondary market prices if that's your thing. Right. But yeah, I've been very pleased actually. Maryland, I think, has gotten a lot better in terms of their beer laws over the last couple of years. And so watching breweries say like Silver Branch or Denizens being able to deliver into DC proper, as well as to serve the Montgomery County and PG County communities, has been excellent to watch. That is not something that would have happened, say, 5 or 6 years ago. Montgomery County in particular has gotten much, much better about this and realized how much these small businesses can really help an area. And that's, you know, not just in terms of tax revenue and such, but in terms of a sense of place.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting. I'm originally from Maryland and back in the area. And so, maybe about a month or so at this point, when the latest legislation was that we could mail and ship beer in Maryland. When we talked with Jim at BAM, he kind of outlined that. Now, I didn't mean that everybody was going to jump in and do it because, you know, Mark tells more than enough horror stories in the transition from Adroit Theory's smaller version of shipping, which they've always done, to major part of their model now. And just he talked about, you know, people that don't know their address and they don't know where they live and all kinds of things. But, Jim was saying, you know, that was a big deal for us. And I told him, I said, look, I moved away for a while. I've come back. And when I heard that we could ship beer in Maryland, I was like, this is a monumental day for us. And even though, like I said, not a lot of people are, his point is it opens the door for some things. Like say you're on the Eastern Shore and you want to get your stuff out to the Western part of Maryland, or you want to do, you know, an event and a beer dinner or something. And then you can now send beers to people that can't get there to pick up that. So it is something that's interesting. And, you know, the discussion of what's going to stay when things go back to whatever the new normal is, I think is what everybody's interested in, because, you know, Jim kind of pointed out, you've opened Pandora's box. It's really hard to put that genie back in when you've proven that delivery models can work and pickup and curbside can work.
Yeah, I mean, we've had these conversations in D.C. with the D.C. City Council as well. I don't know a lot of people who think that the proverbial genie is going back in the bottle. The new normal, I think, is going to be this delivery, the curbside pickup, and in some places, shipping as well. I mean, again, as you mentioned, Maryland is a strange state. And so there's a lot of action between, say, Montgomery and Frederick and Baltimore County. But if you're Cushwa, or say if you're a new brewery in Queenstown, all of a sudden, shipping in the state is looking like a very interesting proposition.
Absolutely. And we've got good advocates here. I mean, Governor Hogan is very pro craft beer, and so is Peter Franchot, and he's talking about, you know, running for governor soon. So, you know, we've got some good allies here in Maryland that understand the importance of the craft beer community. And so we're fortunate for that. And if you, you know, can take anything positive out of something as bad as this pandemic, that's, I think, what you want to try to do is, you know, try to find out what we can do moving forward to make things a little bit easier for everybody to enjoy great craft beer.
Yeah, there's certainly a couple state legislators in Maryland who could use a primary or general election challenge. But in the places where breweries are located, we've seen some really good advocacy on the part of elected officials.
Do you guys have anything coming up in next month or so that people should keep an eye out on? Stories or stuff that you're tracking or events you know that might happen?
Yeah, so I would say there is still a DC Beer Week in the works. We're not entirely sure what it's going to look like yet. It may be mostly virtual and such, but I would say look out for DC Beer Week. Obviously, the big news is that Other Half is going to come. The plans are to open the brewery in October 2020. The plan is to start brewing in mid to late September of 2020. But Other Half could certainly start selling cans at that site before then. And so that's something worth mentioning. Right now, Other Half can be found at two places in Maryland. And one is downtown Crown, like Gaithersburg, Germantownish area. And the other is the Wine Source in the Hampton neighborhood of Baltimore. There's been, I think, a steady flow of drivers from throughout the DMV who order online and pick up from those two spots, and they can drink, they can trade, they can do what people do with Other Half beers. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Ivy City even before that brewery is online up and brewing, because maybe we'll start seeing some can sales there.
Wow, that'd be great.
Yeah. I also mentioned the brewery store, that is the brewery down in Union Market, as in like the California brewery. They're continuing to bring in these interesting pop-ups. And so you'll see, I think, a few more cult sought-after breweries trickling through there as well.
Okay, that's good. Great. Well, again, remind people where they can find you online.
We are at DC Beer, pretty much anywhere you want to be, unless you want to be on TikTok, in which case, Godspeed.
Well, we'll make sure we have that up on our website and in our show notes. Well, Jake, I want to thank you for your time today, especially when you're there on vacation. I'm looking forward to a time in the near future when you and I can get together and share a pint in person.
Sounds good, Jerry. Thanks for the opportunity. We appreciate it.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at shareapintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint. Show notes for this episode are available at shareapintpodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin MacLeod, and can be found online at incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at shareapintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@shareapintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Hulla. Prost.